Mode.
Good evening, everybody, here from Phoenix, Arizona. Here in the United States, we're one day ahead of the actual GMT time for our work in the Dissipation of Glamour initiative. So I think, well, we've been going for about 6 months now. And Olivia Hansen, Tuya Robbins, and myself, we started this thing going for various reasons, and hopefully we will continue, because glamour is indeed a world problem, and the ability to observe reality as it is rare to find, even among us as disciples. So we have a lot of work to do. Right now, we're working with the technique of the presence, and it deals with the cultivation of the intuition, which we have been studying during the last couple of sessions. Remember that if you do miss any sessions, you can go to Makara and participate in the teaching that has taken place, and in the questioning and comments, and also, of course, in the meditation. And we're still working on those two areas, hatred and separativeness, one very much a glamour, and the other the fundamental illusion of all human perception, the great heresy of separateness, which does work its way down to becoming a glamour. And then it's very powerful indeed. Just want to, you know, in the beginning, I just want to welcome everybody. You know, if you come later, I may not be able to welcome you in the same way, but I'm just very happy you're here. Alex, Annette, Antoinette, Carl, Catherine, Debo, Helen, Jean, John, Karen, Leah, Lori, Lynn, Mariut, Martha, Michael, let's see, Natnia, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, or Natnia, something like that, and of course, Olivia, Rebecca, Risto, Suzanne, Tuya, and Vera, Winnie, and Yvonne. If you've just joined, and Suzanne, if I missed you, my apologies. And here we are, backed up by our staff, Brett and Joe, and myself. Let's have a little bit of an alignment before we get into our reading on the technique of the presence. Maybe more difficult to understand than the technique of light, because we're used to working with the light of the mind and somewhat with the light of the soul as it affects the mind, but with the intuition, we are relatively newcomers. It comes from the spiritual triad, and as we've seen, the true definition of intuition is other than has been the case as DK has described it. It's other than normally we think of as the intuition, but his definition as the principle of universality and the ongoing inclusive love, this is very encompassing and a higher understanding of the intuition than we're normally given to consider. So let's just have a little, we are on three continental areas, basically Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and also the Americas. And we link with each other, knowing that we are offering ourselves in service to the planetary hierarchy, and even to still higher powers, to help clarify the 18 lower subplanes the dense physical body of our planetary logos in which we habitually live and which we try to archetypalize according to the higher levels of being which exist on triadal and super triadal levels, the level of the monad and even the logoic plane. All that is eventual, but for right now, if we can just have clearer thinking about our lives in the three worlds and the values which we must promote, then something will have been accomplished. So our goal is to come together in the unity of the soul-infused mind and with the Antikarana working at least a little bit to give us impressions from the higher worlds where truth indeed does reign. Not the truth of our experiences here below, but the truth as the planetary logos, a vastly greater being than we are, has grasped that truth. Many, many Mahamanvantaras have passed, we are told, since the composite being who is the planetary logos was at the stage of one of our masters of the wisdom. So it's a very great being indeed, and we're working within the understanding that comes to us when we align with that great being, and even with the three Buddhas of activity, who are a great triangle in Shambhala and were planetary logoi in a previous Mahamanvantara. So we will offer ourselves according to the techniques given by the Master DK and hopefully help to make a difference by subjective impression. We have to be patient, patient. It's not going to happen overnight, but we can begin this work and join those who have begun it long ago and continue our work together until the glamours and illusions in which humanity habitually walks begin to give way, begin to yield to higher impression. So we sound the Om together, offering ourselves in service to this particular task. And now we will take up our reading where we left it off. We're talking about the unfoldment of human awareness here, and we had this first paragraph. It's been progressive down the ages, and we discussed the two major and related factors, the first being the development of the human mind with the development of the individuality. And this human mind is responsive at first to the lower impressions of a phenomenal nature, but eventually it becomes responsive to impressions of a noumenal nature from the higher worlds. So this is the mind at first working in the field of the world of becoming, and then in that higher world we call the world of being, and then it begins to be sensitive to the intuition and to the wisdom from the realm of the soul. And then we discussed for two sessions the definitions of intuition, which you will find, in the glamour book, or I do recommend that as many of you as possible get the Alice Bailey CD-ROM. It's a marvelous research tool, and if you have not been working with it, but are just sort of leafing through the pages, this is 100 times faster. So we discussed this work beginning around page 2 of Glamour, A World Problem, and we discussed the nature of the intuition as illumination, understanding, and love. Now we're ready to look at the second factor. The first was the development of the human mind in general over the evolutionary process. And now we have the second of the two factors, the factor of the method whereby humanity is made aware of that which is not immediately apparent. Well, we students of occultism, you know, if we weren't interested in that which is not immediately apparent, we wouldn't be studying what we do study, because we're interested in the hidden worlds, which we consider to be the causative worlds, which are even more real than the worlds which appear to our five senses. So we're made aware gradually, how does this happen, of that which is not immediately apparent. And certainly if you've been a student of this work for some time, you know you are tuned in with things that of which you were not aware before. This is the method or process of what has been called, we'll look at these words, imposed revelation. There's a powerful impression being made here. The factor of imposition involves the first ray. Now, when you look at the spiritual triad, it is a blend of the first ray and the second ray in its functionality. It represents the first ray. It is causative, and it is the personality of the monad. But it represents the second ray because the spiritual triad from which the intuition comes, at least in its first nature, that spiritual triad is the true ego, and it is the unsheathed soul. So it's the soul out of its sheath, just like the sword is out of the scabbard. So it has that great second ray quality as well. Even the monad has the first and second ray quality. It's the factor of dynamic will, of course, but it's found on the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, where in fact we can expect to find the etheric heart center even of the solar logos. It's very interesting that these greater beings are working out their destiny on the cosmic physical plane. You know, we have this this chart here, and it shows you that the realm of the monad is on the second subplane. Maybe the only place where we have a truly first ray representation on our cosmic physical plane is the divine plane or the logoic plane, but even then that's ruled by Leo, which of the three fire signs is the one most connected with the second ray and with consciousness, just like Aries is connected with the first ray and being, and Sagittarius more with the third ray and movement. So let's go on here. So this is the method or process of what has been called imposed revelation, or the impression conveyed to minds capable of reception, and may our minds become so, of those ideas, now note these words, of the kind of thing we receive as impression, ideas which don't exist on the lower 18 subplanes, they exist in the triadal world. reception of those ideas, beings, the presences of beings, plans of the divine plan formulated on the atomic plane, and purposes formulated on the monadic plane, which exist behind the scenes. All these things we are not initially aware of. And we, through the process of imposed revelation, we become aware. Ideas, beings, plans, and purposes, which exist behind the scenes, so to speak, and which are, in the last analysis, the factors which determine and condition world processes. And since we're, you know, interested in service for many reasons, we want to be among those who are involved in the conditioning of world processes. Have a bit of a cough here. If you, I'll do my best not to cough directly into the microphone, but I get a little dry as I'm speaking, so please forgive me. Anyway, these revelations or subjective vital impressions are revealed by the intuition. The intuition reveals the ideas, beings, plans, and purposes. And note this, what the intuition has nothing to do with, and have nothing to do with knowledges, impressions, and impacts, which are related to the three worlds of human evolution. Now, those are the 18 lower subplanes, and they are ruled by, symbolically, by the moon. Except insofar that, when grasped and apprehended, these higher things, when grasped and apprehended, they have steadily transformed man's way of living. The intuitives lead the way and present the future to us in a way that we can respond to. Reveal to him his goals. That reminds one of Sagittarius, which is one of the great intuitive signs, and indicated his true nature. And our true nature is up on the triadal and monadic planes, and what we think of as our real nature is, in fact, just a reflection. The revelations given throughout the ages and impressed on the minds of those trained to receive them, and may we be so, deal with the great universals operative throughout the cosmos, throughout the universe, are concerned with the whole. The macrocosmic whole is all there is, we are told. So this holistic perception or inception, however we want to call it, this holistic perception must be ours, are concerned with the whole, and lead to a developed appreciation, this is intuition again, right, of the oneness of life, and with the hylozoistic expression, everything in all kingdoms is alive, and every little tiny unit, even of the lowest kingdom, has a type of consciousness and certainly has being. So this is the factor which the intuition reveals, this process of imposed revelation, and we're told that nothing is so powerful as an idea whose time has come. It's the divine plan which lays out the manner in which the divine purpose will be presented in time and space. And when it's time for an idea to make its impression, maybe we found that in our own lives, it is irresistible. And one feels it as an imposition. You just can't shake it. You're driven by it. And you have to carry out this idea. An idea is really a being incorporeal, which gives shape and form to formless substance. There are many definitions of ideas, but that's one of the ones that Alice Bailey is always repeating. So we've got two factors here, which are very important. The first is the individual factor, and the second is the initiatory or intuitive factor. So these two factors, the individual, the mind, and then the intuition, they create the development of human awareness progressive down the ages. And we are all involved in this right now, or should be. Two paralleling processes, that's what they're called, have produced humanity and its civilization. And we might add to that a deeper type of thing, its culture. Number one is the evolutionary process itself, whereby the mind of the individual has been gradually unfolded until it becomes the dominant aspect of the personality. Well, now, you know, we Bailey people were oftentimes accused of being the mental types who don't have feeling and so forth, but that is not true at all. We certainly do want to place the mind where it belongs, and we're under the guidance of a very mentally accomplished master, Master DK. So we want to have a real development, a parallel development between the mind and the heart. So two processes. The mind of the individual is gradually unfolded. That's the first process. And of course, we never stop with that, even though we may be working on the intuition. Then number two, at the same time, a graded and wisely imparted series of revelations. Remember that initiation is continuous revelation. A graded and wisely imparted series of revelations which have led humanity as a whole nearer to the inevitable apprehension of being. Now, excuse me, Master DK tells us, and he tells us that it should mean something to us, that he is an initiate into the nature of being. Of course, that, you know, it's a strong hint that he's transcended the third degree and really is a master himself. So increasingly, as we build the Antikarana, the apprehension of what being is, so often escaping our realization, begins to come to us, and the intuition will reveal that through a graded series of revelations. They have led him, now these two have led the human being steadily away from identification with form, of which I'm sure we're all still quite guilty, you know, because we're not there yet, away from identification with form and into those states of consciousness which are supernormal from the ordinary human angle, but entirely normal from the spiritual angle. And let us remember the word spiritual is directly related to the spiritual triad. And when you look at the planes of existence, it's the atmic plane, really, that is called the spiritual plane. So the word spiritual is a very high word and signifies a type of focus which is beyond our normal focus. These are two paralleling processes in which we are all involved. Putting this concept specifically into occult terminology, I hinted at this a minute ago, individuality has led to the steady perfecting of the mind. As a matter of fact, the individual part of us is the mental part of us, you might say, and it's through the power of the individualizing mind that we come to regard ourselves as an individual, apparently separate, but later we learn the truth. Individuality has led to the steady perfecting of the mind with its perception, apprehension, analysis, and interpretation, all of which had better be accurate, or were in illusion. These had better be accurate, or we fall into illusion. Whilst initiation through the growth of the intuition, and you know, every initiation is delivered to us on an expanded power of intuition or buddhi. It's the growth of the buddhi in our consciousness, which is not only the growth of intuition, but which reveals the new vistas of each initiation. So whilst initiation through the growth of the intuition brings about, when the mental perfecting process has reached a relatively high degree of development, so let us continue perfecting that mental process, the apprehension of the world of spiritual values. This is the spiritual triad, the true soul, the true ego, of unified being, not just a bunch of beings, but all these things before us who are beings are unified in the one and of intuitive understanding. So let us remember always that intuition has to do with oneness and with unification. This involves a consequent moving of the point of individual focus, where it rightfully is in the beginning, out of the world of phenomena, that's where it starts, into the world of reality, and until we are entering the world of the triad, we are not in the world of reality at all. As a matter of fact, the whole cosmic physical plane, in a cosmic sense, isn't even the world of reality, but for us, it's real enough, and especially once we begin to transcend the causal body, which actually begins to happen as the knowledge petals of the causal body or egoic lotus begin to weaken a bit at the third degree. The lower use of the mind and its processes of unfoldment have produced illusion. Now just focus on that one, because it's inevitable. We're all going to have to wander through illusion, and sometimes DK says it kind of is over in a way at the sixth initiation, but then he looks at it even more cosmically, and he tells us we will not extricate ourselves from illusion until the ninth degree, when we refuse, at that time anyway, contact with the cosmic physical plane. So we're going to wander in illusion, but we can only hope that these illusions are more rarefied than the ones which we suffered under earlier. As a matter of fact, in one of the great third ray stanzas, it says, "All is illusion, O dweller in the shadows." But, it's degrees of lessening illusion and the greater approximation of reality. So anyway, initiation brings about a perfecting process, and we have a better apprehension of the world of spiritual values, etc. And then we move forward. Our individual focus is away from phenomena and into what we call, or Immanuel Kant called, noumena, N-O-U-M-E-N-A. The lower use of the mind and its processes of unfoldment have produced illusion. So we don't want to become the victims of the concrete mind only. We say it's a good servant but a very bad master. Whilst the unfoldment of the higher mind, so you know what I mean by higher mind here, I mean this. This is centered around the monastic permanent atom on the very highest level of the mental plane. So that's the true higher mind, or at least the abstract mind. And even once you move above the dotted line, you're entering the realm within the egoic lotus of higher mind. So the unfoldment of the higher mind, and later its use as the transmitter of the intuition and of higher revelation, will produce the now here's the definition of the third initiation, will produce the transfiguration of the three worlds of phenomena in terms of the world of being. What a powerful occult sentence this is. And basically he's telling us that not only will our consciousness be transfigured, and we will perceive the worlds of phenomena in terms of the world of being, but that the lower worlds themselves will become what I call archetypalized, and will respond to the patterns that are found on the monadic and the logoic plane. I just have a little more to read here, determining that this is what we should deal with, because the next time we're actually going to get into the more on the technique itself. So this last paragraph, and here's a great definition again, and let us take it to heart and ponder on it. Illusion is frequently misinterpreted and misapplied mental perception of truth. We think we know the truth, but we're misinterpreting the true relationships of the things we are perceiving, and then misapplication. We start taking our misinterpretations and we apply them incorrectly in terms of our method, in terms of the time they should be applied, in terms of the context in which they should be applied. And we'll be studying this as we deal with the seven major types of illusion. We do have to have a mind. It has to be sharp, but it also has to be fed by the light of the soul and eventually by the intuition. If we're not going to divide everything up into little pieces, not be able to put them together again. And when we try to put them together, put them together in the wrong way. We need the higher faculties in order not to misinterpret and then later misapply our mental perception of truth. Doing the wrong thing at the wrong time in the wrong place, and quite sure that we're doing it correctly. So anyway, Mercury here is involved, higher Mercury, the transcendental mind. I love that definition of higher Mercury. Transcendental mind. Maybe it only means that you get that kind of appreciation of reality when you have no teeth left. Transcendental, I hope not. Anyway, it has naught to do with the mental phase of glamour, though illusion can be carried down into the world of feeling and become glamour. We have to watch out for this double whammy here. When this happens, its potency is exceedingly great, and because a thought form, what starts out as a thought form, you know, in the white magical process, has become an entity with vital power and the magnetic power of feeling added to the cold form of thought. So we don't want to miscreate. We don't want to become what they call a miscreant. We want to create according to the divine plan and the plan of the soul. So this negative entity inclining us in the wrong direction because of our misinterpretations and because we carry it right down into the realm of desire can become a compelling force in our life, an impelling force, and not just a thought for consideration. So ponder on this, he tells us. But at the stage with which we are now dealing, which is that of pure illusion, a revelation has precipitated upon the mental plane. Well, it must work its way down. It comes from higher realms. And this is the point, owing to failure rightly to apprehend and interpret it or to apply it usefully. See, a lot of people apply the revelation, but at the wrong time, wrong place, wrong context, usefully according to the plan, it has developed into an illusion. And then, you know, this is so powerful, enters upon a career of deception, of crystallization, and of misinformation. And now these are the liabilities of illusion. And if we don't interpret properly and don't apply properly, we are contributing to this. We're going to deceive people. We're going to make their minds crystallized and hardened so they cannot think flexibly, and in general provide them with wrong information which will lead them astray. Okay, friends, that's all I wanted to cover here in our reading. So now if you have thoughts about this and or about the glamour work in general, which you have been pondering, or comments, whatever, we can take these things up now and explore them a little bit before we do our meditation together. So let's see here. There seems to be, Brett, is that a question from Rebecca?
That was a question about what page we were on, which I answered.
Oh, okay, very good.
174.
Okay. Good. Some are actually following it in the book. Okay, so that's very good. Okay, so friends, do you have any thoughts or comments which you would like to offer about what we have been discussing or what you've been thinking about in relation to glamour the glamour work. And I'm making things a little smaller so that, you know, we might be able to keep all this under our eye at the, well, almost. Yeah, I think we can do it. Coming. Okay. So, there we go. And one more line, and we have it. Whoop, I thought we had it. Maybe if I make it a six, we'll have it. But that's really small. But you can, I think you can still see it. Okay. And meanwhile, while I'm fussing around here, you're having a chance to think about any questions that you might want to deal with or any statements that you might want to make. This is deep stuff. We're dealing with the very issue of misapprehending reality, getting things at the wrong end of the stick, having wrong interpretation and wrong application, and therefore delaying our spiritual progress and the spiritual progress of humanity by millennia, even by millions of years, if we had only been wise enough to obey the great fundamental laws which were given to us, we are told, by the God kings of ancient times, we would not be where we are now if we had obeyed the law. Okay, so your thoughts, friends. Be brave, whatever. Okay, so here is Carl, and go ahead, Carl. Yeah, I think, you know, you're on, and your microphone is clear, so you should be able to speak if you have enough volume on your computer. Or if we have trouble along that line, then just write your thought or your question out, but usually you've been able to speak and there's been no problem. Anyway, you try to get it straightened out, and maybe Brett can see what's happening there. Okay. Any further questions? Okay, got it here. That's Rebecca. And look, I know this is difficult work. When I read it, I think, yes, Brett? Yes, Brett.
Rebecca has a written question.
Okay.
Asking, what are the three worlds of phenomena on page 175, paragraph 1?
Okay. Good. What are the three worlds of phenomena? Okay, look. Here they are. The 18 lower subplanes below the dotted line. This is the realm in which the personality functions, the highest aspect of the personality being found around the mental unit on the fourth subplane of the mental plane. So these 18 lower realms, and by the way, they kind of add up to 9, and then you divide by 3. The lower mind, the entire unified astral plane, and then the etheric physical plane considered as a unit. These are the three lower three worlds, as they are called, the worlds of phenomena. And then once you go above the dotted line, you begin to enter increasingly the world of noumena, N-O-U-M-E-N-A, or the higher causative realities, which are responsible for the appearances in the lower 18 subplanes, or the lower three worlds. So, lower mind, the astral or emotional level, and then the vital physical level are the three worlds of phenomena. Now, you know, if I was some great being, you know, like a planetary logos, we might, or maybe a solar logos, the entire cosmic physical plane whereon all of our spiritual aspirations are fulfilled would simply be considered a cosmically phenomenal world, and we'd have to look, you know, we'd have to look even farther up here to find the noumenal world. So it's all relative, but for a human being, those three worlds are the lower 18 subplanes. Okay, anything else, Brett?
Rebecca continues asking, then this is below the diaphragm?
Well, not necessarily exactly. Not necessarily. Let's just put it like this. The take a look at the, here we go. Maybe I can get that. Yeah. The throat center is involved. And even when we begin to check out page 170 of Cosmic Fire, we see even the heart center has lower functions. Maybe I can find that and show you what I mean if I'm on the right page. Where are we? There we are. Okay. I'll try to show you what I mean. Let's see. A treatise on Cosmic Fire. There we go. And we'll go to try at page 170 or 169, something like that. There it is. Take a look. Man controlled from the astral plane. Note, a lower function of the heart center is also involved. Man controlled from the mental plane. The heart is also involved, and so is the throat. So it's not just the lower chakras that are involved in the lower three worlds, but preliminary functions of even the higher chakras. Now, I want to say this too, that the Ajna center is even involved with man, partially controlled by the ego, but he is advanced man. His consciousness is not in the ego itself yet, but he is controlled by the solar angel, ego, etc. But his focus is still in the lower worlds. So the Ajna center is involved, and the Alta Major center, these are higher centers. The Ajna center is involved in simply focusing the personality. Now later, the Ajna center has higher capacities which can relate it directly to the spiritual triad, but not in the beginning. So my answer to you is no, not entirely only those centers which are below the diaphragm, although they may have an accent. Those centers may be quite accented because, in a way, the mental elemental is found in connection with the sacral center. And this we learn in esoteric healing. And then also the solar plexus for the emotions and the base of the spine, even though a very powerful later center has its earlier function, just gluing, we might say, the vital body and the physical body together. So lower functions of the higher centers are still involved in the 18 lower subplanes and in the lower three worlds. I hope that's, you know, somewhat clear. Now let's try Carl again. Carl, are you there? Can you speak? Brett, do you know what's wrong with Carl's system there? Have you? Okay.
No, I'm afraid not.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, Carl. I bet it's your volume on your computer or something like that, because your microphone is clear, and you just got to make sure that whatever headset you're using, if you are using one, is completely plugged in and is acknowledged as the headset you want to use. Anyway, as soon as you, as soon as it works out for you, we're interested in hearing what you have to say. Okay, Brett, further. Anybody?
Rebecca continues saying, "Thank you, very mind expanding. My brain hurts
okay.
in a good way."
Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, it's a joke taken from a play, you know, that my daughter once auditioned with, and it was about one of these new age people, and she was saying, "Well, I may be confused, but I'm confused in a higher way." So I'm hoping that that is the case for all of us. Inevitably, there are things over which even our planetary logos is relatively confused. This great being to us is just a tiny speck when compared with the galaxy, which itself is just one of hundreds of billions of galaxies. So there's always going to be that area when things don't come together yet entirely, and we call it confusion. It means there's a fusion of factors which should remain independently related to each other, and one seeing thing seems to be another thing, and another thing seems to be another thing. We haven't got real clarification on the position of those factors and their true relationship. They flow into each other and become, and the lines become blurred, but hopefully the brain hurts in a higher way. Okay, that's good. All right, what else?
Yes. Michael, Helen has a question saying, "You mentioned we have no illusions until ninth initiation. What beings are at the stage?"
Helen, I want to make sure that I'm clear about that. We definitely have illusions all along the way, and we are, maybe this is what you mean, freed from the illusions of the cosmic physical plane at the ninth initiation, which for us on the cosmic physical plane is the first time we're really free of illusions. But just to give you a sense of proportion, the Christ and the Buddha, illustrious world teachers that they are, have not yet completed the seventh initiation. And I think that it may not even be possible. I'm trying to recall, Brett, I don't know if you remember, can one even take the eighth and ninth initiation on this particular planet? So,
yeah, not so far.
Not so far, apparently. I think that that's the case. So we may have to travel to other sacred planets on our way, literally, to the stars in order to take those still higher initiations. So let's just say that if an initiate of the sixth degree can travel to Sirius and to other places, what kind of beings are these of the eighth and ninth degree? And, you know, I think that I just don't know. I can only hazard a kind of a guess, but they are vastly experienced beings, and they may have already returned to our solar system from other places in order to continue their initiatory spiral. But this I do want to say, that the initiatory systems of man, and of course of the animals, and of the angels, and of the logoi, and of the solar logoi, are all different. I mean, we may run up 1 through 9 in any of those systems, but one lower system does not include the higher. In other words, the initiatory system of a human being does not include the initiations of a solar angel, whom we are told is an initiate of all degrees. I assume what that means is initiate of all possible human degrees. But many solar angels together, when breathed forth from the sun, in mysterious ways we don't understand, amalgamate to become a planetary logos. And so the planetary logos has its own system of how many initiations? 7, 9, you know, it depends on what you read, which are different from the initiations of a solar angel. And then the solar logos has its own system of initiations. It's not that a planetary logos is suddenly, upon reaching its third degree, going to become a solar logos. No, it has to go through all of its possible initiations before it switches up a whole initiatory level and becomes a solar logos. And on and so forth and so forth and so forth. Every category of being may be, according to the 10 dimensions of cosmos, has its own initiatory system. Now, right now, we are within the human initiatory system, and once we, well, we're no longer men in the lower sense, but we are still monads of the fourth order, and once we reach the seventh, maybe eighth or ninth initiation, this is speculation, we may be ready to change kingdoms altogether and be part, or hierarchies even, ready to change creative hierarchies and start on a system of initiation which is higher than the human system. For instance, there are low initiations of solar angels which are much higher than anything a man can achieve. So a lot of these things are the mysteries of initiation. Literally, all I can offer is the general outline and some speculations. And as we get closer, we will learn more about our opportunities. We do know that some human beings do become solar angels, but they don't become solar angels of the highest degree. They have to learn by going through the process and go from low to high gradually, just the way any initiate has to do. So all that lies ahead of us. And as far as those great beings that take the eighth and ninth initiation, certain Buddhas, as they are called, they are almost ready to change hierarchies, in my view. Brett, do you have anything to add to that? I know you studied the subject.
That sounds fine.
Yeah, fine enough for the moment, perhaps. Okay.
Yeah.
For the moment. Okay, Helen, so I hope that, you know, gives us an idea of these exalted Buddhas of the eighth degree, which are even higher than our Buddha. Just imagine. And as far as initiates of the ninth degree, they're ready to make a transition to the cosmic astral plane altogether. But they are all called Buddhas. And even the planetary logoi are called Buddhas, Kumaras, things of that nature. It's just a question of measuring their scope. That's the key. Okay.
Yes. Helen continues saying, yeah. Wow, that makes sense. Why we continue into eternity. Thank you.
We do. Of course, the word eternity has a lot to do with cycles. So here's what I want to say against the popular use of the word. Eternity is not infinity, but we do continue on into infinity forever, as we have been already forever. And there are many mind-blowing thoughts that, you know, that just are almost counterintuitive when you begin to think about eternal progress and infinite progress. See, we have eternal progress leading us to re-become the one and only great logos of our particular solar system. But that's only one of an infinite, you can't say number, of an infinitude of similar, excuse me, a little water. One of a infinite number of a universal logoi, all of which have their limitations, and all of which have existed forever. Universal logoi, according to the great breath, have existed forever. And always in eternity, we fulfill the demand, the purpose of any universe, and then move on infinitely forever to fulfill the next in the sequence of universes. I think a little etymological research on the word eternity might differentiate it from infinity. Anyway, it's a big subject. Anything else from anyone?
Michael has his hand up.
Okay, let's see. Let's get there. Okay, go ahead, Michael.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Ah,
I really like this conversation because it's such a fine example of the lower mind at work as it's trying to understand all these lofty concepts. Lower mind is so involved in understanding, and it's so necessary for us to develop that lower mind so that we also develop discernment. It's not until we go into the higher mind that understanding is no longer necessary because then we just know.
Well, Michael, let's differentiate between three types of mind: the lower mind, the higher leading to abstract mind, and the transcendental mind or intuition. Now, I can only offer you my point of view on this. Some of the great mathematicians, philosophers, even historians and so forth are actually already working in the abstract mind, where the great conditioning thoughts which overarch human development can be manipulated and can be reasoned, but they are not yet working in the transcendental mind or the intuition. So here's my thought, that we as students of occultism have to learn how to work in the realm of the great abstractions, in which many of the concrete things are subsumed under certain words, certain symbols, and increasingly, as we build the Antikarana, we will be able to do that. But and here's my point, that even higher mind, even abstract mind, is not yet what Master Moria would call straight knowledge, and which the Tibetan is calling intuition or direct knowing. So once we can still manipulate thoughts in the realm of higher mind, and that's where actually I feel that I do a lot of work there, but it's not yet the straight knowledge of the intuition or of the transcendental mind. And this is what we're all trying to work on when we make buddhi and atma, no, excuse me, buddhi manas into one thing. As disciples, we have to make buddhi manas an interflowing, connected team. And of course, Gemini is very much involved in the rendering of buddhi and manas into one interconnected flow. That's my opinion, and I just offer it to you, for whatever it's worth.
And we are, as we're going through the initiatory process, we are developing that touch into that higher mind. And oh, it's late here.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. Look, no, into, you see, here's the thing. What's the difference between higher mind with the great abstractions and transcendental mind with pure reason? And look, I don't know all the answers here, but I ponder that, because when the intuition speaks, there's no refuting it. But when the higher mind speculates and reasons about things, then there's still pros and cons and maybe and possibly and all the rest of it. So I just feel that there's an aspect of higher mind which we are entering, and an aspect of intuition which we long to enter and will enter as we continue to build the Antikorana. Yeah, okay, you're right. It's late where you are. Boy, you're burning the post-midnight oil.
Thank you for leading these webinars. It's marvelous. Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks, Michael. And thanks for that question, because it is such a key issue. What is the distinction between these three minds which must unite? You know, three minds unite refers to a couple of triplicities, okay? But one of the things that it refers to is concrete mind, higher mind, and transcendental mind. And as initiates of the third degree, maybe we're going to learn more about the union of those three minds.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Okay, and Vera, please go ahead.
Yeah, my question probably doesn't exactly relate to the glamour, so feel free not to answer. What happens with reincarnation after the fourth initiation? Yes, I know about the Maya Virupa. What does reincarnation applies, say, to the cosmic astral plane, to the lowest subplanes, or does it reincarnation applies only to the three lowest physical subplanes?
It depends. It depends. It's a good question. It depends on who you are, because the great beings also reincarnate. But for them, you see, for them, for instance, look at the map here. For us, we're going down into matter, and it's the higher four ethers and the lower three dense physical levels. But for a being, a reincarnating being like a planetary Logos, they come into the higher four ethers and the lower three dense physical subplanes, especially Asoda Logos, and on and on. So reincarnation, or cyclic objectivity, you know, however we want to look at that, is a principle that even applies to galaxies. And so you know what, you see what I'm saying? That the planes themselves mirror each other, but they keep on getting less and less, or greater and greater, but the structure is similar, and reincarnation prevails. And even, look, think about reincarnation in the highest sense. It is the great breath. Every time the great being breathes out and creates a universe or becomes a universe, that's reincarnation. So you can't escape it. Law of periodicity. Thanks for that question. It's an interesting one. Okay, anything else? Anyone else?
We have two more written questions. Nadine asks, obey the laws and principles. Having failed long ago, are we able to go back and start to obey them?
Yes. 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 That's precisely, Nadine, what all of this reappearance of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ is all about, to help humanity consciously, now that it is more mental humanity, know what those laws and principles are. And, you know, the Meditation Mount and some of those other groups, I've never memorized them. Maybe someone wants to look up the six of them. But in a larger sense, laws and principles can be now seen, understood, and deliberately obeyed, because the vision of what it means to obey them or not obey them has been presented to a more intelligent humanity. So yes, we can go forward, and we can obey them. And look, they may be a little bit different from the way they were in the early days, because man was a huge, huge being, and largely etheric physical. So every level of human development has its laws and principles to be obeyed. Now we're more in the Aryan race than in the sixth sub-race of the Aryan race we're entering, and the laws and principles have a new adaptation for us. In a way, they're always the same, but they are adapted to the level at which the human being finds itself. Now let's see what else is here. Okay. In the current world situation, I see the importance of humanity to see and accept as a fact the conspiracy which is going on. And I think, well, you know, the Black Lodge is always conspiring. They're always breathing together to obstruct evolution. And some human beings respond to that kind of stuff. Okay, the conspiracy which is going on, and I think humanity is now ready for this, and is slowly opening to this reality, yes. And I would say probably has to suffer a bit more, unfortunately, before really open. You know, you kind of wonder, with harmony through conflict being our ray, if we have to blunder into everything, or can begin to actually see ahead and do it in a planned and better way. But my question is, the great conspiracy, is it a world illusion? It can lead to a lot of, you know, finding the devil under every rock and behind every tree. So we have to be careful about our own potential paranoia. You know, I talk to some people who are so full of conspiracy theories that they couldn't see the truth if they tried, and even the blatant truth is understood as an illusion or a conspiracy. So we have to be very careful about not doubting everything that is presented to us as truth. Is it an illusion, or is it more a glamour, thinking that no one can be so bad? Well, DK said, okay, the Black Lodge is so bad you can't even conceive it. So we'll just leave it at that. And he said that speculation about them, you know, if you really, who are they and where do they live and all the rest of it, can be so dangerous. It is futile. It is profitless and dangerous, he said, that kind of speculation. But yes, they can be so bad that we can't even conceive it. But even they are brothers of the one ray and must be redeemed eventually before the universe can be reabsorbed into the absolute one. So that no one can be so bad to want to hurt other people for his own advantage, especially on higher levels. Well, the highest the Black Lodge seems to go is the causal plane. DK said a few black magicians can work on that level. And then they develop along a devic line, and they are trapped by a great material deva. But in terms of our Syrian line of development, which takes us into the higher triad and the monad and the Syrian line of initiation, they cannot go that way. And so eventually they are subject to the disintegration of material forces. They cannot break out of the dense physical body of the solar logos. So, you know, what do we know? Not much, except that the left-hand path, even an initiate of the second degree can take the left-hand path unless that initiate overcomes the world, the flesh, and the devil, the way the Christ taught us to do. So, you know, and some do wander far into the land of distances. That's what DK called it. But then they come back, you know. And DK says this is showing the very successful work of the White Lodge. If you ever want to read a really good occult story, read the book Zanoni by Bulwer Lytton, who is an English novelist, and somehow he captures the life of an initiate and those who are opposed to him. And at every stage, there is a choice. Now, I suppose it's possible also to become unredeemable in this solar system, and then the monad has to sever the connection. All of this, you know, you can find in DK's work, but there are baddies out there, you know, and they have, DK tells us, they are characterized by, this is interesting, unique blindness. But even they, if not the solar system necessarily, but before the universe can be reabsorbed into its fundamental essence, all unredeemables have to be redeemed. So, because there's only one being, you know, when pralaya finishes, you can't leave anything outside of pralaya. It means the purpose of the universal logos must be fulfilled, and every one of those monads is part of the purpose as well. All right, this is a little bit wandering answer to what you said, but I hope that covers it. Okay, now Debo is saying the Anglo-Saxon is the fifth sub-race. Which human group can we say the sixth? Well, I don't know if we have a name for it, Debo, but increase. Now, this is interesting in light of what Michael had asked earlier. The sixth sub-race of the fifth root race is going to be the sub-race which particularly develops the abstract mind. The Teutonic Anglo-Saxon kind of thing. When we've been at all, we've been everywhere. The fifth sub-category of the fifth root race, the fifth sub-race of the fifth, that is concrete mind, very much so. Although it can include soul mind as well on the higher level of its development. But if you look carefully at this, you're going to see that higher mind, wait a second, if I can get there, higher mind is subplane 3 and 4. But abstract mind is subplane 3 and 2, but abstract mind is subplane 1. So even if you are developing the higher mind and begin to think in terms of the light of the soul, you have not necessarily yet reached the abstract mind. And the abstract mind is precisely that which is going to be developed by subplane, by the sub-race number 6. We don't really have a name for it. According to Leadbeater, not so much in Europe perhaps, but still there also, in America, in New Zealand, in Australia, he named those areas. So I would say in the Americas, especially I think maybe North America and Canada, in Australia, in New Zealand, experiments are underway to create colonies of the sixth subrace of the fifth root race. So, we may identify with our form, but our form is very temporary, and we've been at different times through all of the races and subraces and will be. I guess that's the best I can do on that, Debo. If you have anything further that, has not been answered, just let me know. Okay, now, what do we got here? This is Suzanne, also brother of the third degree. Ah, yeah. That's said to be a very good book, Suzanne. And I don't know the author either. But those are practical books about how an initiate lives. Also, I would recommend, if you haven't read it, the book called The Initiate in the New World, and The Initiate in the Dark Cycle. Those three by, it's really by a hidden name, but the...
Cyril Scott.
Cyril Scott was the outer name for the poet behind it.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, they're very interesting and very... And some of the figures that we normally deal with show up there, various masters doing various things. It's quite interesting. And then brother of the third degree. Good. Okay. And thanks, BB. Yes, hopefully this is clarifying for everybody and clarifying for me, too, as I try to think about it. We are moving always towards greater clarity if we persist approaching the ageless wisdom in the correct manner. Okay, I think that's got to be about it, because we do need to do our meditation. Are there anything else, Brett? Are we good? Okay. We're pretty good. And if anybody else, I would love to keep going, but I think we have to now work on our meditation for the next 15 minutes, okay? So, you know, this is a very stubborn glamour, you know, hatred, repulsion, you know, all those things that work against love and unification, and all based on that illusion of misperception called the great heresy of separateness, and it's the one truly great heresy, we are told. So anyway, we will do as we do now. And, well, you may see the, we're not going to name all the group members, you know, but you, there seem to be at least 29 of us plus the three of us, so 32 of us. And we will have a little silence in which we all feel ourselves coming together as a group of those who work on the plane of mind, but it is the soul-infusing mind. So in the silence, we come together. And thus render ourselves a more effective instrument. Now we together sound the protective formula, knowing that this is not easy work, and in subtle ways we do put ourselves at risk by doing this work, and we actually do need the protection. And we do the, you know, the long arm of the cross as we, from the middle of the forehead to the middle of the chest, and the left eye and the right eye, forehead and chest on the first line, left eye, second line, right eye, third line. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light, and I work, and from that point, I never move. Our preparatory stages are to unite the three lights, the etheric physical light rising to the mind where it meets the light of lower mind, we visualize this, then we meditate on soul contact, and in our own way, and perhaps using the creative imagination, we recognize the soul light. And now, we fuse the two lesser lights, etheric, physical, and mental, on the plane of mind with the light of the soul, soul light, and the three become one in our creative imagination. And the three are one, and this will be our instrument. And to affirm this, we say together, followed by the triple om, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Oh. 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 Now we begin the use of the formula, saying together as a group and thinking deeply about the searchlight that we are turning on and turning upon the astral plane. Radiance and we are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. This is our task. Now we're going to invoke the spiritual will from the atomic plane and even from the spirit aspect, passing down through the jewel and the lotus and the synthesis will petal and the sacrifice petals of will, and further, and into the astral and etheric head centers, astral and etheric base of spine centers, the spiritual will. And we're going to empower our beam of light with the willingness to carry forward this work, which hierarchy seeks to accomplish. And we say together, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. So our powerful, empowered searchlight is imaginatively seen making contact with the astral plane and all of its forms and unclarity. DK describes it, a gray, hissing mass of delusion and confusion. The real is not found there. Now we are going to name the glamours we're working with, and we're going to utter these words of power, three of them, and we're going to simultaneously visualize the light, our searchlight, penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. now for 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose. We're going to bear these words of power in mind. No appearance, no quality, no life. And we will watch the work proceed. and our beam of light, we have seen it doing the necessary work, and the sunshine of love, of harmony, of cooperation, of mutual support takes the place of all those things which wrongly divide humanity at this time. And so we then withdraw the beam from the astral plane. We refocus it on the plane of mind within the group mental body. Our attention is away from the astral plane, and we will keep up the rhythmic work, and we will now sound the Om 3 times, realizing that work has been accomplished. On the emotional level, but also on the mental and vital levels, which support those misleading emotions and desires. Thank you, everybody, for your participation. We are on the morning schedule, GMT, for this week. And tomorrow we're working with the invoking of the souls of nations. And we've been focusing on places of peculiar strife and discord and suffering, like Aleppo and Mosul, Syria and Iraq. I'm not sure what Tuya has in mind for tomorrow, but it'll be along the line of the souls of nations and invoking the peace which must come as the Prince of Peace approaches. And then on Sunday, attracting money for hierarchical purposes. And we're also moving into the time of the Sagittarius full moon. There'll be a pre-full moon webinar as usual. There'll be an exact moment service meditation broadcast led by Tuya. And there will be, I'll be broadcasting the Sagittarius solar fire ritual oratorio meditation. It's a big meditative opportunity along with the music and oratory. So I appreciate your attendance. We all appreciate it. Thank you very much. And we continue to study forward, meditate forward, and make our subjective contribution to the clarification of human consciousness. And this will be on Makara. Brett will put it there, and you can let your friends know that they can, if they have not attended, they can study along with us and meditate along with us by using the video. So here in Arizona, it's a good night at early in the morning, and good day, good afternoon to all of you wherever you may be. Thank you so much for attending. All the best to you. Bye-bye.